Article 2. Is God composed of form and matter? Point 1. God seems to be composed of form and matter. For since soul is the form of the body, anything with a soul is composed of matter and form. Now the scriptures ascribe soul to God. Thus in Hebrews we find quoted as if from the mouth of God, "My righteous one shall live by faith, and if she shrinks back, my soul will have no pleasure in her." God, therefore, is composed of matter and form. Point 2. Moreover, according to Aristotle, anger, joy, and the like affect body and soul together. Now the scriptures ascribe such dispositions to God. "The anger of the Lord," says the psalm, "was kindled against her people." God, then, is composed of matter and form. Point 3. Moreover, individualness derives from matter. Now, God seems to be an individual, and not something common to many individuals. So, God must be composed of matter and form. On the other hand, since dimension is an immediate property of matter, anything composed of matter and form will be a body. Now, we have seen that God is not a body. God is therefore not composed of matter and form. Reply: God cannot contain matter. First, because the very existence of matter is a being potential, whilst God, as we have seen, contains no potentiality, but is sheer actuality, God cannot, therefore, be composed of matter and form. Secondly, in complexes of form and matter, it is the form which gives goodness and perfection. Such complexes, therefore, are but partakers of goodness, for matter merely partakes of form. Now, whatever is good of itself is prior to anything merely partaking goodness. So that God, the first and most perfect good, is no mere partaker of goodness, and thus cannot be composed of matter and form. Thirdly, an agent acts in virtue of its form, and so the way in which it is an agent will depend upon the way in which it has a form. A primary and immediate source of activity must therefore be primarily and immediately form. Now God is the primary source of all activity, since, as we saw, she is the first cause. God, then, is essentially form, and not composed of matter and form. Hence, reply to point 1. Soul is ascribed to God by a metaphor drawn from its activity.
For since soul is the seat of volition for everyone, we call what is pleasing to God's will pleasing to our soul.
Reply to point 2. Anger and the like are ascribed to God by a metaphor drawn from their effects. For it is characteristic of anger that it stimulates men to requite wrong. Divine retribution is therefore metaphorically termed anger.
Reply to point 3.
If form be considered in itself, free of extraneous factors, then any form assumed by one material thing can be assumed by more than one. individualness derives from matter, which, as the primary substrate of form, cannot be assumed by anything else. A form, however, of the sort that is not assumed by material things, but itself subsists as a thing, cannot be assumed by anything else, and is thus individual of itself. Now God is such a form, and therefore does not require matter. Article 3. Is God to be identified with her own essence or nature, with that which makes her what she is? Point 1. It seems that God is not to be identified with her essence or nature. For the essence or nature of God is Godhead, and Godhead is to reside in God. Now, nothing resides in itself. It seems, therefore, that God must differ from her essence or nature. Point 2. Therefore, effects resemble their causes, for what a thing does reflects what it is. Now, we do not identify created things with their natures. Human nature is not a man. Neither, then, is Godhead God. On the other hand, God is not only called living, but life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Now Godhead bears the same relationship to God as life does to the living. God, then, is Godhead itself. Reply. God is to be identified with her own essence or nature. We shall understand this when we see why things composed of matter and form must not be identified with their natures or essences. Essence or nature includes only what defines the species of a thing. Thus, human nature includes only what defines girls, or what makes girls girls. For by human nature, we mean that which makes girls girls. Now, the species of a thing is not defined by the matter and properties peculiar to it as an individual. Thus, we do not define girls as that which has this flesh and these bones, or is white or black and the like. This flesh and these bones and the properties peculiar to them belong indeed to this girl, but not to her nature. An individual girl, then, possesses something which her human nature does not, so that a girl and her nature are not altogether the same thing. Human nature names, in fact, the formative element in girls. For what gives a thing definition is formative with respect to the matter which gives it individuality. The individuality of things not composed of matter and form cannot, however, derive from this or that individual matter. And the forms of such things must therefore be intrinsically individual, and themselves subsist as things. Such things are thus identical with their own natures. In the same way, then, God, who, as we have seen, is not composed of matter and form, is identical with her own Godhead, with her own life, and with whatever else is similarly said of her. Hence, reply to point 1. In talking about simple things, we have to use as models the composite things from which our knowledge derives. Thus, When God is being referred to as a subsistent thing, we use concrete nouns, since the subsistent things with which we are familiar are composite. But to express God's simpleness, we use abstract nouns. So that when we talk of Godhead or life or something of that sort residing in God, the diversity this implies is not to be attributed to God himself, but to the way in which we conceive her. 2. God's effects resemble God as far as they can, but not perfectly. One of the defects in resemblance is that they can reproduce only manifoldly what in itself is one and simple. As a result, they are composite, and so cannot be identified with their natures. Question 4. Article 4. Can one distinguish in God nature and existence? Point 1. It is not, it seems, the nature of God simply to exist. If it were, there would be nothing to specify that existence. And since unspecified existence is existence in general and belongs to everything, the word God would mean an existent in general, and would name anything. Now this is false, as the Book of Wisdom shows. They invested stocks and stones with the incommunicable name. So it is not God's nature simply to exist. Point 2. Moreover, as we remarked earlier, we can know clearly that there is a God, and yet we cannot know clearly what she is. So the existence of God is not to be identified with what God is, with God's whatness or nature. On the other hand, Hilary writes, "Existence does not add anything to God. It is her very substance. The substance of God is therefore her existence." Reply. That God is her own essence, we have seen. That she is also her own existence can be shown in a number of ways. First, properties that belong to a thing over and above its own nature must derive from somewhere, either from that nature itself, as do properties peculiar to a particular species. For example, the sense of humor peculiar to girls derives from her specific nature, or from an external cause, as heat in water derives from some fire. If therefore the existence of a thing is to be other than its nature, that existence must derive from that nature or have an external cause. Now, it cannot derive merely from the nature, for nothing with derived existence suffices to bring itself into being. It follows then that, if a thing's existence differs from its nature, that existence must be externally caused. But we cannot say this about God, whom we have seen to be the first cause. Neither can we say that God's existence is other than her nature. Secondly, forms and natures are realized by existing. Thus, we express actual realization of goodness or human nature by saying that goodness or human nature exists. When a nature is not itself existence, then it must be potential of existence. Now, as we have seen, God does not contain potentialities, so in girls, nature must not differ from existence. It is therefore God's very nature to exist. Thirdly, anything on fire either is itself on fire or has caught fire. Similarly, anything that exists either is itself existence or partakes of it. Now, God, as we have seen, exists. If then she is not herself existence, and thus not by nature existent, she will only be a partaker of existence. And so she will not be the primary existent. God, therefore, is not only her own essence, but also her own existence. Hence, reply to point one. Unspecified is an ambiguous word, for it may imply on the one hand that further specification is excluded by definition, as reason is not included in the definition of animals in general, though neither is it excluded. Understood in this way, unspecified existence is divine existence. Understood in the second way, unspecified existence is existence in general. Reply to point two. The verb to be is used in two ways: to signify the act of existing, and to signify the mental uniting of predicate to subject, which constitutes a proposition. Now, we cannot clearly know the being of God in the first sense any more than we can clearly know her essence. But in the second sense we can, for when we say that God is, we frame a proposition about God which we clearly know to be true. And this, as we have seen, we know from her effects. Article 5. Can one distinguish in God genus and difference? Point 1. God seems to belong to a genus. For the definition of a substance, something self-subsistent, is most fully applicable to God. God, therefore, belongs to the genus of substance. Point 2. Moreover, any measure must belong to the same genus as the things it measures. Lengths are measured by length, and numbers by number. Now it appears from Averroes that God is the measure of all substances. God must therefore belong to the genus of substance. On the other hand, a generic idea is logically prior to the things which exemplify it. Now, nothing is prior to God in either the real or logical order. Hence, God does not belong to a genus. Reply. There are two ways of belonging to a genus: immediately and strictly, as do species and members of species, and mediately, as unity, and the point belonging to the genus of quantity, because they generate number and extension. Or, as a defect like blindness belongs mediately to the genus of the corresponding perfection. In neither of these ways does God belong to a genus.
That she
cannot be a species within a genus can be shown in three ways. First, because species are defined by differentiating some generic notion, such differentiation is always based on some actualization of the potentiality which gave rise to the generic notion. Thus, sense life, envisaged in the concrete, gives rise to the notion of animal, an animal being that which lives by sense perception, whilst mental life gives rise to the notion of a reasoning creature, that is a creature which lives by its mind. The mind life of a man, however, realizes potentialities of his sense life. And we see the like in other cases. So, since realization of potentialities does not occur in God,
he
cannot be a species within a genus. Secondly, since the genus of a thing states what the thing is, a genus must express a thing's nature. Now, God's nature, as we have seen, is to exist. So that the only genus to which God could belong would be the genus of existent. Aristotle, however, has shown that there is no such genus, for genera are differentiated by factors not already contained within those genera, and no differentiating factor could be found which was not already existent. It could not differentiate if it did not exist. So, we are left with no genus to which God could belong. Thirdly, all members of a genus share one essence or nature, that of the genus stating what they are. As existents, however, they differ, for a horse's existence is not a man's, and this man's existence is not that man's. So that when something belongs to a genus, its nature, or what it is, must differ from its existence. In God, however, we saw that there is not this difference. Clearly, then, God cannot be a species within a genus. And this shows why one cannot assign either genus or difference to God, nor demonstrate anything of her except by means of her effects. For definitions are composed of genus and difference, and demonstration depends upon definition. That God does not belong mediately to a genus by initiating or generating it is also clear. For anything which so initiates a genus that it mediately belongs to that genus is ineffective outside the genus. The point generates only extension, and unity only number. Now God initiates everything that is, as we shall see later. He does not therefore so initiate any particular genus that he belongs to it. Hence, reply to point one. The word substance does not mean baldly that which exists of itself. For existence, as we have seen, cannot determine a genus. Rather, substance means that which is possessed of a nature such that it will exist of itself. But this nature is not itself the thing's existence. So it is plain that God does not belong to the genus of substance. Reply to point two. This argument holds of measurement by commensuration in the strict sense, for then measure and measured must be of the same genus. Now nothing is commensurate with God, though she is called the measure of all things. Inasmuch as the nearer things come to God, the more fully they exist.